It is 8:32, and we have with us live in the studios Maria Tomczyk, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning. Job's not here today. He's out traveling and doing a little bit of talking about the war in Iraq at some conferences in Portland and I think Idaho.
Yeah, it's at part-time job as a snake oil salesman, isn't it? Oh, wait, I'm not supposed to say that on the air. So let's dive into stuff this week. We have many guests today in Seattle.
We do. We have a whole conference
of
governors.
Say illustrious.
No. A whole conference of governors from the majority of the states of the United States are here in Seattle to rub elbows with corporate CEOs and corporate lobbyists and get their agendas for the next year. Now, the governor's conference is supposed to be a policy meeting where the governors of the various states sit down and they discuss what the big issues are on the state level and what they want to accomplish and in the next year or two as far as goals for the their various constituents. Now, when I say constituents, I don't mean you and me. I mean the corporate CEOs who are hosting this event. Now, this event costs $2 million, and it's paid almost entirely by large major corporations. Some of the biggest donors are Boeing, Amgen, Microsoft, the usual suspects. Those folks are going to outnumber the governors themselves by a factor of something like 3 or 4 to 1. And so even if this event was open to the public, and it's not, you and I would not have a chance to a chance. I was going to say a chance in, well, you know, I can't say that word on on the air.
Actually, I think you can.
Okay, we would not have a chance in hell of being able to talk to Governor Gary Locke. Now, also, it's interesting that Governor Gary Locke has spent much of the last, last few months organizing this event, calling up major corporations to get donations to host this thing. Now, this policy wonk meeting is what they call it, just a policy wonk meeting. So
hey, at 4 to 1.
It doesn't need to be open to the public. I think policy meetings are the one thing that needs to be open to the public in particular because it's a chance for us to list the priorities, the true priorities as we see them for what our politicians, our supposedly elected representatives, should be covering in the next year. Now, the main focus of this year's event is supposed to be the healthcare system and what's failing and what's working. Now, you can bet that this weekend the governors are going to be surrounded by representatives from the pharmaceutical industry, representatives from insurance companies, all standing there saying, look, you do not want to set up a state pool to negotiate lower insurance rates. You do not want to set up a pool for low-income folks to get better drug prices from the pharmaceutical companies. You do not want to do all these things that can have a major impact and have a major effect for folks who have little or no access to health care or to the medicines that they need. Now, that is a scandal. It really is. And it really speaks to the issue of access. The people who have the access to the folks who make the decisions on our behalf are folks with lots and lots of money and have a vested economic interest in seeing that the system stays the way it is, messed up and not functioning correctly. Now, there are going to be some groups protesting this whole setup, and I think it would be a very, very good idea for folks who are listening this morning to go down and join the protest. There's a demonstration scheduled for 1:30 at Westlake Park. It's mostly made up of folks. It's sponsored mostly by labor union groups, the Washington State Labor Council, King County Labor Council, a whole raft of labor union folks. Going to have the Teamsters there, the Welfare Rights Organizing Coalition, El Centro de la Raza, lots and lots of good folks who work on social justice and economic justice issues. I think some of the best events I've ever been to are ones organized by and full of labor union folks, because I tell you, there's never a time when you feel more empowered than when you're amongst a group of other people who know exactly what it means to work, to organize around workplace issues, issues of raising the minimum wage, of access to health care. These are the folks who really know what they're talking about, and they don't mess around. So I recommend that if you really want to spend a nice day in the sun working on a social justice issue, that's a good event to go to, is this rally down at Westlake Park at 1:30 p.m. Traffic's going to be a bear today, though, so you'll want to take the bus if you can.
You always want to take the bus if you can.
Yeah, you always do. But today would be a particularly good time to do that. There's Mariners are in town, and there's the Bite of Seattle going on, so traffic's going to be really bad.
Right. And Department of Homeland Security is catering the governor's.
Yes, and I'm sure they'll have a few streets closed off, right, so it'll be hard to navigate. Now, I also understand at noon there's going to be some folks gathering at Seattle Central Community College to march downtown to join the folks at Westlake. So if you're in that vicinity, you might want to check that out, too.
Right. All right. Well, there is a just completed another conference on the other side of the Pacific
Ocean. Yes, there is another conference that happened this week, too. This one happened in Bangkok, Thailand. It's the World AIDS Conference. Now, the World AIDS Conference occurs about every 2 years. It's a chance to really sit down and take stock of what's been going on in regards to AIDS and the effort to try and combat the AIDS epidemic worldwide. The statistics are looking kind of grim. Last year, there were 5 million new cases of HIV in the world. 38 million people now live with the disease. Some 25 million of those folks are in sub-Saharan Africa, and another 7.2 million in Asia. Now, in those areas of the world, there are very, very few nations who have the resources and the health infrastructure to combat the disease. Now, that word infrastructure is very, very important, because health infrastructure is the sort of thing that you need in order to utilize the funds coming from major donors in order to combat the disease. So I'm talking about things like medical clinics, healthcare workers who are adequately trained. I'm talking about the distribution network for medicines and supplies to rural communities. Talking about hospitals to treat folks in urban areas. Those things are things that are completely or mostly absent from many, many of the nations where the AIDS crisis is at its worst. And what we're finding is that even when the U.S. or other nations make major donations to combat AIDS, NGOs are finding is that in many of these countries, like Zimbabwe or South Africa or other nations in sub-Saharan Africa, what they're finding is that they have to go out and they have to set up a clinic from the ground up in order to even begin treating people. They have to bring in doctors and nurses and trained healthcare workers, because they just don't exist. And that hasn't always been the case in some of these countries. Now, the push in the last decade or two to privatize the neoliberal economic policies that have pushed governments to abandon funding for healthcare in a lot of these countries has led to the breakdown of the healthcare infrastructure in many third world countries. So they're having to start over from scratch to try and combat a disease. Now, this breakdown in healthcare infrastructure has led to a lot of other problems too. Like, for example, we thought polio was eradicated 10 years ago. In fact, they were thinking about, you know, maybe we don't need to vaccinate for polio anymore because it's a dead disease, you know. Well, here it is. It's reemerged in Africa. There's a major polio epidemic now in a large swath of Africa, from Nigeria across Central Africa into the southern regions, that they're trying to combat now. So with the resurgence of preventable diseases that we thought we had conquered long ago, there you have to deal with that in addition to the AIDS epidemic, which comes on top of that, and it's made much worse in Africa because there are people dealing with malaria and with polio and with other illnesses that they shouldn't have to be dealing with, and then they get AIDS on top of it. Now, the picture of the disease is changing too. with a statistic that 75% of infected young people between the ages of 15 and 24, so young folks who are getting the disease, 75% of them are women. Now, in the Caribbean, for example, some 70% of new infections in people of all ages are in women. So here you're seeing a disease that is attacking one gender. And you might ask yourself, why is that? Why is the bulk of these new infections in women? And largely that's because of a combination of poverty, privatization, and sexism has made it especially hard for women to get the information that they need and to have the resources to protect themselves. And it's really an effort that's, if we want to combat AIDS, we really are going to have to look at ways to improve the status of women in the third world and improve the economic level of all families to try to raise everybody up a little bit so that women can protect themselves. Now, this is particularly bad that women are the ones that are getting a lot of the new infections, because it's women's work that make communities run. Particularly in rural societies, it is unpaid women's work. Now, the AIDS epidemic in a lot of these places are leaving a lot of orphaned children, and they're leaving a lot of communities struggling to just keep themselves going. There are AIDS workers who go out into the rural areas in Africa and say that there are whole communities that have totally collapsed. So villages that have become depopulated, the remaining survivors have had to move elsewhere, give up their land and move elsewhere, because so many people have died of AIDS, particularly the women who perform a lot of the work, like the basic farming in the community, carrying water, raising children. A lot of those women are struck down in the prime of their life, the time of their life when they would be doing the bulk of that work to keep the community running. So it really is a terrible crisis. What has the U.S. government done about it? We are the richest nation in the world. We are the nation that can afford to put forth the most resources to combat the disease. Well, the Bush administration has pledged to spend about $15 billion over the next 5 years for AIDS. Now, it's good to spend a lot of money to combat what is the biggest crisis to face the human race in a long time. Certainly a much bigger threat to human security than terrorism has been or ever will be. However, a mere $15 billion is a drop in the bucket compared to what we've spent on the Iraq War, which has cost some $200 billion or more just in the last year. Now, the Bush administration money also comes with strings attached. That money is not going into the UN fund to fight AIDS. That money is going to be dispersed in a bilateral way. So the U.S. government will make deals with various nations one-on-one to disperse the funds. So far, we've made deals with some 14 nations. And while the UN AIDS fund disperses money to about 128 nations around the world. So the money we have, we're kind of holding it close to our chest. Now, the other strings attached to that fund are the money will only go to nations that put abstinence first. So if you're a nation that thinks that condoms, if your healthcare workers say, well, the use of condoms can help keep the disease from spreading, and that's what we want to stress, well, you won't qualify to get funds from the U.S. government because you have to have the policy of counseling people that abstinence first is their best way to prevent them from getting AIDS. Now, this in particular is very bad for women because it is young women who are getting the disease most. They're also the ones who are most likely to have most likely to need access to birth control. They have the fewest resources and they have the least ability to say no when a man pushes them for sex. So it is most important right now for the AIDS epidemic, to conquer the AIDS epidemic, for healthcare workers to be able to counsel women to use condoms and how to use condoms. And they need to be counseled in barrier methods of birth control. And the Bush administration is saying, no, we won't provide the bulk of our money for that. We will only provide it for abstinence education. And that is a crime, I think. Now, the other major string that comes attached to these funds is that the money must be spent to pay for brand name drugs. That means U.S. pharmaceutical companies are cleaning up on this.
They're making a killing.
They're making a killing. Yeah, they're pocketing a lot of that money. Now, the UN fund will pay for generic drugs for people in third world countries to take to prevent the disease. Now, generic drugs will cost about $150 per person per year versus the brand name drugs, which now, after AIDS activists have protested and demanded a discount, the brand name pharmaceuticals manufactured mostly in the United States cost about $700 per person per year. So that gives you some idea of where our taxpayer money is going in the fight against AIDS. Right now, healthcare workers around the world are telling the folks who are getting money from the U.S. government that they should use that money to pay for healthcare infrastructure, so building clinics and hiring healthcare personnel, and that they should then use money from the UN AIDS Fund to buy drugs because they're getting a much better value that way. That's a crime.
Yeah, those pharmaceutical companies just seem to be running things, pretty much.
I'm sure there's plenty of pharmaceutical industry reps who are trying to corner Gary Locke right now and possibly also Christine Gregoire. I'm sure she's probably hanging out at that governor's conference meeting, too, along with maybe Ron Sims. They're all getting cornered by the pharmaceutical reps, telling them what they ought to be doing as far as healthcare in the coming year.
I think they're rubbing something other than just elbows. Let's move along if we could.
Okay.
How about jumping over to This Week in Iraq?
This Week in Iraq.
Yes, last week we talked about the $18 billion in U.S. taxpayer money that Congress voted for reconstruction in Iraq and how only some $300 million of that $18 billion has been spent so far on reconstruction. Overall, aid money from all the nations who have pledged to give money to Iraq for reconstruction has been very, very slow in arriving. Now, there's a reason for that. There are several reasons for that, actually. Of the $13 billion in pledges from nations other than the U.S., only $1 billion so far has been turned over to the International Fund for Iraq that's monitored by the UN and World Bank. Almost half that amount is just from one donor, Japan. Now, the bulk of the $13 billion is supposed to take the form of loans, but the donor nations, the World Bank and the IMF, who are responsible for those loans, are waiting for Iraq's crushing $120 billion in debt to be forgiven. Now, most of that debt's owed to European nations, Russia, Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and another $125 billion is owed in reparations from the 1991 Gulf War. Now, that money is not going to be forgiven anytime soon because Iraq has oil income coming in, and these nations are still hoping that some of that oil money can be used to pay Iraq's old debt. So that's a problem. First of all, they can't release the loans because Iraq has an enormous debt load. Now, there are some reasons also why the aid money, the money that is a direct donation to aid to Iraq, direct donation of aid to Iraq, is not coming in. I want to list some of those reasons. For one thing, the global economy is sagging. So a lot of the countries that pledged a little while ago to make donations to Iraq are looking at their budgets and saying, well, I don't know if we even have that money now to pledge. Another reason that many nations are waiting is that they don't want to be seen as supporting an illegal war, particularly supporting the Bush administration in just going out and declaring war on whoever they like and not caring whether or not they have a vote from the Security Council. So they don't, and they particularly don't want their home populations who are not supportive of the war to say, what? You're giving money to those guys now? No way. So now the third reason is that there's been a lot of scandals, and we've been talking about them here on the show, scandals over the lack of financial oversight at the Pentagon and the Coalition Provisional Authority in their oversight of the funds that U.S. taxpayers have thrown into Iraq so far. So these other nations around the world are saying, well, if they don't even watch over their own money, if they're just throwing them at companies like Halliburton who are overcharging guilty of gross overcharging, or suspected and almost certainly guilty of gross overcharging, then what are they going to do with money they get from us, from various other nations around the world? And those other nations are saying, do we want to throw our money, our little bit of aid money that we can give to other nations around the world, do we want to throw it down the black hole right now? Or would we rather spend it on something like, for example, the UN AIDS Fund? Well, I think countries are pretty hesitant right now to spend it on Iraq for obvious reasons. And finally, the security situation in Iraq has brought most of the reconstruction projects to a standstill and many to an almost standstill. A lot of countries have pulled out their aid workers that have gone over to help out because of the recent kidnappings of foreign aid workers in Iraq and foreign reconstruction workers. And many companies have completely pulled their personnel out of Iraq and are in a holding pattern, just kind of a waiting mode to see if the violence is going to subside. So far, the violence hasn't subsided. This week, we've seen a number of car bombings, including a massive car bombing at the main entrance to the Green Zone in Baghdad, just feet away from where the new U.S. embassy is going to be and where the new Iraqi interim government has its headquarters. And then there's been the recent assassination this week of the governor of Mosul. In spite of the fact that he was extremely well guarded, he still was killed by insurgents. And as I mentioned before, the continuous kidnapping and execution of foreign aid reconstruction workers and foreign contractors in Iraq. So that's one big reason why the money's not flowing into Iraq. And when the money isn't flowing into Iraq, the reconstruction isn't happening. And without the reconstruction and rebuilding of Iraq, the Iraqi people are becoming more and more desperate and more likely to join the insurgents. So it's a downward spiral going on right now. Now, at the same time, our coalition of the willing in Iraq is becoming the coalition of a few willing and a few not so willing who are starting to pull out their troops. this week, the Philippines decided that because one of their guys was taken hostage and a group in Iraq threatened to behead him, that they were going to give in to that group's demands and withdraw their troops. So they're withdrawing their 50-some personnel from Iraq. It's a minor commitment in the first place, so why not? And they're saying, okay, looking at the trade-off here, given that so many Filipinos at home are against this war, let's just bring those guys home. And they're doing that. Thailand has also announced that they've begun a withdrawal, even though they weren't scheduled to withdraw their troops until September. They've started the withdrawal already. So their troops are going to be gone very soon. Poland has said that Poland is often cited by the Bush administration, by the way, as a main and staunch ally in Iraq. And Poland has said that they're not going to renew their commitment and their troops are going to be out of there by early next year. Meanwhile, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Richard Myers, here in the United States, told Congress just a couple weeks ago that U.S. troops are going to be in Iraq for at least 5 more years. I think that's going to be mostly a U.S. commitment of troops, that a lot of these smaller countries are going to be gone long before then.
All right.
So that wraps up this week in Iraq.
Moving along, the Senate this week had a vote on same-sex marriages that
they did.
Didn't turn out quite the way that some people had
they
thought.
They did. It was a really cynical effort by the Bush administration to bring up this topic in an election year and make it a major campaign topic when it really is something that most people in America don't really think much about and don't care about in the light of more pressing problems like the economy and the war in Iraq. And after the Bush administration said, yes, we want to introduce an amendment to the Constitution banning same-sex marriage, that I think a lot of people scratched their heads and said, you know, what the heck are the priorities of this government anyway? And so even in the Senate, where Republicans have a majority, Republicans did not get all of the members of their party to vote for this amendment. It went down 48-50 with several Republicans voting against it. And they were far short of the 60-some votes they needed to make it pass, because an amendment to the Constitution needs a two-thirds majority in the Senate. They were so far short of that goal that it's laughable. And they even could not get a majority. They even could not get all of the members of the Republican Party to vote for it. That's how lame this was. And I think it's an issue that's going to fade off the radar very, very quickly, just because there are so many more important things to be discussing and talking about. It really was one of these issues of, huh, why are senators wasting their time looking at this when they should be holding public hearings into the Iraq prisoner abuse scandal, for example? They should be holding public hearings trying to figure out who really in the Bush administration was responsible for pressuring the CIA to come up with fake data on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. None of that's going on. The Senate released their intelligence report on the intel behind the CIA's intel on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction. And what they found in that Republican-controlled committee is a vast split between the folks who wanted to get the investigation over and done with because it's an election year and they don't want the Bush administration to look bad, and those folks who said, wait a minute, the clear picture here is that the Bush administration leaned heavily on the CIA and the Defense Intelligence Agency and State Department intelligence to come up with the data to support our agenda, to support the Bush administration's agenda, which was to go to war with Iraq at all costs.
All right. Well, with that, we are pretty much out of time. Got a couple events coming up, one happening today.
I'll mention it again, the rally and march downtown, 1:30 at Westlake Park. Get there early if you can. About 12:30 would be good. That's to protest the governor's conference and to demand that they put people first and not the corporations that our governors like to give tax breaks. And then next Saturday, there's going to be a benefit for Jav. I'm going to plug this now since he's not here. Jav has had some medical problems. Folks might know about his continuing medical problems. A little while ago, he was dumped by his insurance company, and before he could get on a new plan, he had to spend some $20,000 to pay his local mom-and-pop pharmacy for the medicines that he has to take every day to keep him healthy. Jav has pretty much depleted his entire savings, so if he has another health crisis like that, there won't be any funds for him to pay anybody for anything. So we're holding a benefit for him to try and raise some funds. It's next Saturday at 7 p.m. At the Trinity United Methodist Church. That's 6512 23rd Avenue Northwest in Ballard. There'll be performances by Jim Page, Rebel Voices, the Pinkos, and others. So recommend that you show up to that and help Jav to build up his savings again, so the next time he needs money for his health, he'll have it.
Yeah, which he does regularly.
Yeah, and then go down and protest and say, you know, it's sinful that people have to pay out of pocket for these kinds of expenses.
All right. Very quickly, where can people find Eat the State?
Eat the State can be found on the web at www.eatthestate.org. If you have questions, comments, tips, you can give us a call at 206-903-9461.